The debate over the Kyoto Climate Treaty has often been cast as a confrontation between businesses and environmental groups. During the president's trip to Europe this past week, it was portrayed as a battle between Europe and the United States. At the same time, a conference here in Washington put the issue in another context, as a struggle between the world's rich and the world's poor. NPR's Richard Harris has that story.
Robert Watson has spent much of his career studying the science of climate change and the potential impacts of global warming. He heads the United Nations Scientific Committee, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which issues official proclamations about the subject. But at a World Bank meeting on Thursday, he put those familiar issues to the side.
We must not think of climate change as an environmental issue. It's not. It's a development issue.
Watson argues it's a development issue for two reasons. First, because the choices countries make as they develop will have a major impact on the future climate, choices about deforestation and energy technologies in particular. And second, because most of the impact of climate change will be in the developing world.
Many of the poorest live on natural ecological systems, coral reefs, forests, grasslands. Climate change threatens these natural ecological systems. Climate change threatens, especially in developing countries, agricultural productivity. There will be decreased water availability and decreased water quality in many arid and semi-arid areas.
And according to these United Nations projections, sea level will rise substantially over the coming century or two. Consider Atiq Rahman's home country, Bangladesh. Most of it is very close to sea level, and that poor nation doesn't have money to build dikes to protect its land.
25% of Bangladesh will go underwater. The whole agricultural breadbasket will go. Many of the small islands will disappear along with their cultures. That is genocide. That's where the problem is.
And Rahman, an activist and scholar, is frustrated that so much of the argument over the Kyoto Treaty, and even to some extent the underlying agreement known as the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, is about relatively small changes in the wealthy economies of the United States and Europe.
The truth is, 1 billion people in this planet live on less than $1 a day. 2 billion people live on less than $2 a day. That is the reality, and it is in that reality that United Nations Framework Convention was signed.
Times have changed a lot since President Bush's father signed that Framework Convention at the 1992 Earth Summit in Rio, and even since the 1997 Kyoto negotiations. For one thing, researchers now have a greater sense of who the winners and losers will be from climate change. Robert Mendelson from Yale has been looking at the impact on various economies around the world. The United States, for instance, will have higher cooling bills in the summer, but lower winter heating bills. And he expects agriculture in temperate countries like ours will thrive.
The northern countries, the countries that are closest to the poles, probably will benefit from this. And they'll certainly benefit for the next 50 to 75 years. The countries that will be hurt right away, and it'll get worse and worse as it continues to warm, are the low-latitude countries, the developing countries. So what it raises is a new equity issue, which the early climate negotiations didn't have to worry about.
The stakes are high for the developing world. Others at the World Bank meeting said the treaty negotiated in Kyoto was actually not well designed to draw those countries in to make a truly global agreement. David Victor at the Council on Foreign Relations says the problem is the treaty requires countries to make promises that could turn out to be very cheap or could end up being very expensive. There's no telling in advance.
Even Alan Greenspan can't control the exact emissions of carbon dioxide from the U.S. economy in a given year.
That means there are big uncertainties in the cost of meeting those obligations. Those uncertainties are one of the major reasons the Bush administration has backed away from the Kyoto Protocol. Victor argues that those uncertainties are much more daunting for developing nations with their fragile economies. So he says Kyoto is the wrong formula for a treaty that ultimately needs to include most nations of the world.
I hesitate to suggest this, but perhaps Bush did the right thing, maybe for the wrong reasons, but he did the right thing and he's going to force a real rethink.
Even if the treaty went into force, it would only be a tiny step toward changing the Earth's climate. But it is supposed to set the world in a new direction. The idea was to create incentives for the industrialized world to come up with cleaner ways to produce electricity in hopes that developing nations like China would then turn to those superior technologies as they built up their own energy supplies. Svend Auken, Denmark's Minister of Energy and Environment, argued that strategy is starting to work. His country has made a huge push to develop turbines that capture energy from the wind, with benefits all around.
Today we have 15,000 jobs in producing wind turbines. It's our third biggest export industry.
Some of those exports have gone to China, India, even Bangladesh, with Danish subsidies. Auken agrees that the Kyoto Treaty isn't ideal, but he says one fundamental principle is sound. The industrialized nations should take the first big steps to address climate change, since they are responsible for most of the gases that contribute to global warming. Richard Harris, NPR News, Washington.